when the one droplet at a time is made into steam, it's got a porous member and a little 2 millimeter heater on top, and there's a hole in the middle. So it creates so much of pressure that the steam is coming out in the form of a geyser. So it's at very, very high speed. Mm-hmm. And when because it's coming at very high speed, the water molecules do not come together between the time where it makes the steam and the point of entry, because it has a mass. So you just hold it like this. And the particle size, we've done two independent studies, is less than 5 microns. Mm-hmm. Typically, water molecules are so adhesive. So for example, if you're in a spa, you'll see those water molecules around you and you'll see a thick mist. Whereas we create a very, very fine mist that travels deep into your sinuses.
Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a vodcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. If you are new to our channel, consider subscribing to it and hit the bell icon so that you never miss an episode. Our episodes go live at 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. daily throughout the week. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to have a very, very successful entrepreneur from San Francisco, California, Varun Nanda. Varun, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Varun is the co-founder and president of Vapor Inc., which is a medical devices company for medical humidification, and he's worked with Denderon, Genentech, and Novo Nordisk. So Varun, let's talk about Vapor Inc. And you just told me that you have launched in India, but tell me about this venture.
Yeah, so it's, I've been in the healthcare industry for 30 years now. And after working for several companies, Genentech was the last corporation, mm-hmm. big corporation that I worked for. And they were bought by Hoffman La Roche, which I'm sure everybody's familiar with. Mm-hmm. And once Hoffman La Roche bought Genentech, there was a lot of bureaucracy. And I'm very much, very much a person who loves to create and build. And Genentech was an awesome company because it allowed me to have my own business unit and my own way of functioning. Mm-hmm. And once Hoffman La Roche bought Genentech, I decided to leave and try and explore something different. Mm-hmm. And so me and another ex-Genentech person, Lars Barford, who's my business partner, mm-hmm. we started looking for things to do. And we are both marketing and salespeople.
Okay.
And so we decided we wanted to do something that would help people, which is what's been our criteria, our entire lives. But at the same time, didn't want to have something that was extremely regulatory heavy, because we're not regulatory experts and we are more of commercial experts. So we found this company called Vapor that actually provides humidification in the most sophisticated manner that you can think of. And having grown up in India with steam and steam therapy, where we used to, take a bowl of water, put little wicks in it and put a towel over our head, which was extremely inconvenient. And then we saw this company that had modernized the way to give steam. So basically what this company does, and we've got 13 patents. So we bought the company, but they had not been successful at commercializing it. And that's what our expertise was. So after buying it, that's what we decided is to really spend the energy to commercialize it. So what Vapor does is the product that we have and the patents that we have, we take a droplet of water and we boil that one droplet at a time. When you boil it one droplet at a time, you create a lot of benefits. The first benefit is safety. If you turn the device upside down, you don't get a drop of hot water. So you'll never have any burns. Whereas in the traditional methods, there were a lot of burns that used to happen on an annual basis because you spill the water and it's extremely hot, as an example. You also can control the temperature of what the steam is coming out at by putting a fan on the way. Mm. And when the fan brings in the air from outside, it actually is coming through a HEPA filter. Mm-hmm. And so it's also an air purifier. So we created an air purifier and steam inhaler in one as a result. And because you're taking only one droplet of water at a time, you could actually use it in a handheld device. So literally you can walk around with it and you can take it in your golf cart. For example, I play golf and I get allergies all the time from grass. And if you put it in your golf cart, anytime you feel allergies, you can wash your insides, which is how you can get rid of allergens. So the convenience of steam that you can have in an airplane or in a golf cart or in a car for that matter is amazing. And so you get an air purifier and steam inhaler in one that's completely convenient, completely safe. And the most interesting one, which quite frankly was not the reason we bought the company, that we realized after we bought the company, is that the way the patent works or the technology works is that we, when the one droplet at a time is made into steam, it's got a porous member and a little 2 millimeter heater on top, and there's a hole in the middle. So it creates so much of pressure that the steam is coming out in the form of a geyser. So it's at very, very high speed. Mm-hmm. And when it, because it's coming at very high speed, the water molecules do not come together between the time where it makes the steam and the point of entry, because it has a mass, so you just hold it like this. And the particle size, we've done two independent studies, is less than 5 microns. Mm-hmm. Typically, water molecules are so adhesive. So for example, if you're in a spa, you'll see those water molecules around you and you'll see a thick mist. Whereas we create a very, very fine mist that travels deep into your sinuses. So this is something we did not anticipate, that the effect of steam is already known to be good, but ours is so much better because of keeping the particle size to less than 5 microns, which is similar to asthma inhalers. So it actually travels deep inside and it clears all your sinuses. So between effectiveness, safety, and convenience, that's what's made this product quite popular in the US, and now we've just launched in India.
Fantastic. So tell me, you know, in the pandemic, there seems to be a lot of, literature or a lot of articles being written about the need for steam inhalation. I have two questions. Number one is, what are the benefits of steam inhalation, and is this going to be able to help a COVID patient or just to prevent COVID?
Yeah, so I think it's, I've seen a lot of those different videos and so on. There is quite frankly no science that proves that. It's something that, you know, people talk about and so on. It logically makes some sense, and I'll tell you why in just a second. Mm-hmm. But there is no clinical study, so we don't actually talk about it. Mm-hmm. We just talk about, you know, the benefits of steam therapy in general. Okay. And then we talk about how we make steam very convenient, easy, and safe to use, mm-hmm. and very effective. Mm-hmm. And then it is up to the people to think about whether they want to do steam therapy or not. And if they do steam therapy, there's no better way to do steam therapy than the one that we do.
Interesting.
In terms of the benefits, mm-hmm. so there are two things that I'd like to say. Number one, any time you're over 108 degree Fahrenheit, and quite frankly, I don't know what the conversion is, mm-hmm. to centigrade on that offhand, mm-hmm. but any time you're over 108 degree Fahrenheit, mm-hmm. you actually will kill viruses as a result. Now, you're not going to get rid of the entire viral load.
Sure.
You will reduce the viral load, and that's been shown in some studies. Mm. Our temperature, so we vary our temperature of steam between 105 degree Fahrenheit and 115 degree Fahrenheit. Mm. So if you put it at the higher setting, you're above the 108 degree Fahrenheit, mm-hmm. and you're likely to kill some viruses. And that's why we are actually, the FDA allows us to say that we are good for flu. Flu also is a coronavirus. So it's similar than COVID, but we have no data that actually shows that steam can actually benefit COVID patients. But logically, to some degree, it does make sense, because all you're doing is you're reducing the viral load. You'll never eliminate the viral load completely, but you could benefit patients over 108 degrees from a theoretical standpoint. Since my background is pharma and biotech, we never like to make any claims unless and until you're absolutely sure that you have a clinical trial, which we don't.
Very sensible. So let's talk a little bit about Vapor. You said that you acquired this company. Now,
That's right.
A lot of people who are our viewers and listeners are startup entrepreneurs. And in one way, you and your partner actually did a startup venture. So my question to you is, what were some of your challenges, you know, after you acquired Vapor and built it into a nationwide brand or now across the world?
Yeah, so I think for us, quite frankly, the biggest challenge was financing. not really used to, you know, we worked, both me and my business partner, Lars, we worked for large companies. We had big budgets. My big successful launch was the launch of Avastin, which is a global brand in oncology. My expense budget was $1 billion.
Wow.
And so we went from an expense budget of $1 billion to basically having no money. We wanted to be very careful, even though we individually had resources. So we could have launched the company in a way that was, you know, just put in a bunch of money and try and do the best we can kind of thing. Instead of that, we actually started the traditional entrepreneur way, which was literally from my garage. I have a little cabana in my house. We made that our office. We used to ship product from the garage. And even though we could afford somebody to actually do shipping for us and so on, we chose not to. And we chose to run the company on a pure financial basis of, as we make sales, we will invest back into the company. So we kept the P&L of the company separate from any personal wealth. And so as a result, we actually literally ran it as its own entity. And we went through many different versions of, we had an offer from a VC, for example, to finance the company, but we would have to give away a major chunk of the company. So we chose not to take that VC offer. Subsequently, we've actually talked to private equity since we've now got revenue and so on. And we can get into the story. It's a long story, so I know you don't have time for it. But basically, we again chose not to take private equity money. So we've really grown the brand by itself and using our own resources and the resources of some other individuals who have invested in the company, their own private wealth. And quite frankly, that was the biggest challenge for us, because consumer goods companies, it takes a lot of resources and the margins are very low. Whereas the pharma biotech side where I came, the margins are extremely high, and it's a very different business from that standpoint. So that was a huge learning for us.
Interesting. So, well, two comments. One, you know, who knows, one of these days we'll see your garage as one of the famous garages of California again, you know, and will be much photographed. But, you know, what you are doing is really bootstrapping a startup. And I think I must compliment you on the way you're building it, because I build startups myself. But, you know, what are your views in terms of being able to build new technology, which you have, and rolling it out? What are some of the challenges that a lot of startup entrepreneurs like you would face?
Well, you know, for us, again, I think it could be different for different people. But for us specifically, we are both marketing and salespeople. We, again, work for large companies where we had financing was not an issue. Manufacturing was not an issue. We had to learn a lot about manufacturing during, you know, with this startup. We were actually, when we bought the company, the product was being made in California. And quite frankly, the quality was not very good. So people have this misinterpretation that if you have a product made in the US, the quality is awesome. It's actually quite the opposite, because when you make the product in the US, the cost of labor is so expensive that you don't do quality checks at every step of the way. And so we moved manufacturing to Indonesia. And when we moved it to Indonesia, the quality of our product went up because we started doing quality checks at every step. And so something as simple as that, which was quite an effort, not only were we able to reduce the cost of the product, and by reducing the cost, we were able to reduce the retail price, which gave us a bigger market and more people could benefit from the product. The challenge is, if you make it in the US and it's so expensive to manufacture and the quality is low, your cost structure is so high that you end up actually having, you're forced to have a much higher price point, and then people are not going to buy a product. So people who can benefit are not benefiting from the product, so it defeats the whole purpose. So something as simple as moving manufacturing overseas actually creates more jobs in the US, because we now had a successful product, which, you know, led to the product being available in retail, which leads to my retail partners like Target, Walgreens, Walmart, and so on, making more money, which leads them to actually hire more people. So we actually did an analysis that showed that we were employing at least a couple of hundred people in the US as a result of moving the 10 jobs that we had in manufacturing here overseas. So that was quite a revelation. And I talked to politicians about it, that, you know, don't come in the way of moving manufacturing overseas, because in fact, manufacturing overseas creates more jobs in the US than just trying to keep the jobs in the US with respect to manufacturing.
Very interesting. So, you know, you mentioned a couple of times about the large companies that you have worked for in your entire career, and now you are a startup entrepreneur, or maybe no longer a startup entrepreneur. Two questions on that. One is, why did you decide to make this transition to becoming an entrepreneur when you were in a big, serious, senior position in a large company? And second, what have been some of your learnings?
So the first one is relatively easy. I actually decided to retire after I left Genentech, and I'm a golfer. So I was playing golf, and I did that for about 6 months. Mm-hmm. And my business partner similarly retired also, and he's a tennis player, and he was playing tennis, and we both play at the same club here in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And I think after 6 months, both my wife and his wife decided to tell us that you need to go get a life. So we decided to put our heads together and figure out what we want to do next. And quite frankly, initially, we started a company that was doing software, because we had decided we don't want to do something that requires huge amount of regulatory interference or environment, because we are commercial people. And the software idea went only so far, because we also needed IT support to actually develop the product. And that was posing a bit of a challenge. And along came this company, and we saw their patents, their products, and we fell in love with it in terms of seeing that this could be something that could, we always wanted to do something that helps people, mm-hmm. and being our background. So we saw this as being something that is pretty incredible, that can help people. And at the same time, be very interesting to actually build something from the ground up. So that's how we got into it. So quite frankly, we are entrepreneurs, you know, by chance, I guess, is the way to put it. Okay. It was not a conscious thought initially. Okay. It became more of a conscious thought after about 6-8 months of just saying, okay, let's go out and try and do something.
Very interesting.
And then, of course, it was very exciting. So we continued doing it.
Fantastic.
In terms of learnings, I think you know, I believe that you learn something new every day. I actually was just joking with my children that when I was in India, I learned a lot about cricket. I haven't really focused on cricket, for example, for 30 years. I mean, I used to, you know, listen to cricket 30 years back. Mm-hmm. But when I was in India this time, there was the whole series with the UK. And I ended up listening to it, and I learned a lot about cricket. Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring it up is because there is no end to learning. You learn something new every day. Hopefully somebody learns something from this conversation. And me just talking to you, I'm going to learn something tonight. And so I think as an entrepreneur, you never stop learning. So I can give you the big picture learnings, like I already did to some degree, which is we learned about financing. We learned about how to really manage money in an effective manner in terms of the challenges of not having a big budget and still making sure that the product continues to be increasing awareness and so on. We learned a lot about manufacturing. We learned a lot about retail. Quite frankly, the one thing that maybe a lot of people talk about is people and leadership. And I think that was more innate in the two of us. So I wouldn't say there was huge learning there, except for the fact that you still have to lead a corporation where you're, when I was at Genentech, we used to pay the big dollars and hire people with the extreme amount of experience. Mm-hmm. Whereas at Vapor, we had to hire, like, for example, my two engineers, you know, they've been hired straight out of Berkeley, out of college. But they were amazing people. Mm-hmm. And so how do you develop people in a small company who have no experience and give them the tools to actually build the experience, that was a learning. Whereas in Genentech, we used to always hire people who already had years of experience. So there were tons of learnings, and I still learn every day. But I would say, you know, right from manufacturing to financing to, you know, managing people who don't have experience, you know, and the list just goes on.
Fantastic. So Varun, let me now move to the next segment of our conversation, which are a few questions for you personally. And I think I have time for three or four questions now.
Okay.
For someone who's come out of a large company environment and who's building an interesting startup, what are some of the core values you believe in?
Well, so I guess the biggest core value for me has always been when I left Genentech, when I had, maybe that's the best way to explain it. When I left Genentech, they did a, you know, send away party and so on, and people stood up on the stage and, you know, bid farewell and so on. And they coined a word and they said, we need a new word to be added to the thesaurus. Mm-hmm. And they said that they should add the word called possibilitarian. Mm-hmm. And the reason was because anybody who came into my office ever mm-hmm. and said, we have a challenge, I used to always ask, what's the solution? Mm-hmm. And if they didn't have a solution, they would say, well, this is impossible. I would say nothing is impossible. We just got to figure out how do we make it happen. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that's my biggest core value. I've never believed that anything is impossible. Mm. I've always believed that, you know, whether it is, it could be lack of resources, it could be lack of leadership, it could be lack of something that is seeming like it is impossible. So my biggest core value probably is that nothing is impossible and it can be done. And so that's what I've built my career on, is always thinking that anything and everything is possible.
Fantastic. And a follow-up question from that would be that from where you are today, as you look back at life and as you look ahead, what does success mean to Varun?
As I look at it today, that's a difficult one. I mean, I guess success is at the end of the day is helping a lot of people, you know, with this product. I mean, this is probably going to be the last segment of my life in terms of, I don't see myself doing another entrepreneurial effort. I'm not in the business of necessarily just, you know, churning this company and selling it and moving on kind of thing. I think we have a lot of build that we can do on this company in terms of helping people. And so I think, just like I told you, launching in India has been great. Mm-hmm. We have the rest of the world to actually launch in. And the more people that we can actually help is probably, from a pure satisfaction standpoint, is probably the thing that I would look at from a success standpoint. Knock on wood, but I've been lucky in terms of my personal life and my family, and I have three kids, and, you know, I've been married for 35 years, and, you know, so being lucky on all of those fronts.
Wonderful.
And financially being reasonably lucky. So I don't see success of that as being something I aspire for as much. I just hope I can maintain it and look forward to enjoying the efforts that created that. However, I do get excited. Like even today, I asked, you know, I've hired a CEO in India, and I asked him how many people ordered the product in India, and we just launched it, and there were 10 people who ordered, and yes. It just got me very excited that there were 10 people, and I'm like, you know, make sure you follow up and ask them, you know, how did they see the experience? What was the benefits, and so on and so forth. So I get excited by any time I hear that people are actually, you know, purchasing the product and then finding out, you know, I get amazing stories in terms of how people have benefited from the product. And we don't promote for this, just FYI, but I used to work on a drug at Genentech for cystic fibrosis. And I don't know if you're familiar with cystic fibrosis.
I am.
But you get a lot of gunk in your lungs. Mm-hmm. And it's almost impossible to take that gunk out. And so there are these drugs that actually try to take that out so your lungs don't collapse and so on. And I had this lady who gave me a phone call in the early days, and subsequently, actually, you can find the review on Amazon. She put the review on Amazon, and she has a child who was suffering from cystic fibrosis. And of course, the child was on all these different medications, but then they used MyPureMist, and this person used MyPureMist on a regular basis, like 2 to 3 times every hour. So it was, you know, a very intensive use, but just because of steam and because of the small particle size, like I was talking about, it goes deep inside your sinuses, but also a deep in to actually release that gunk. The person was able to actually live a longer life because they were able to take all that gunk out on a regular basis. And she was so thankful that nothing worked prior to MyPureMist. Now, we don't promote for cystic fibrosis. It's not something, you know, we get into because we don't have clinical data, but just the anecdote of how it made a difference in this person's life is just an amazing story for me.
Absolutely. Varun, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. I loved your adjective of being a possibilitarian. I think that is an amazing word that I have learned from this. And I'm sure you're going to use this possibilitarian skill to be able to make MyPureMist a big success. Yeah. Thank you again for all your excellent information, inputs, and knowledge.
Thanks. Thanks, Ashutosh.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.